Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Poor. My guest today is Harry Hawkins, who ran for president on the Green Party line in 2020. And we're here to talk about Joe Biden. So he's been president for a few months now. From your perspective, what do you think? Are you pleased? Do you think the average person is pleased? Share your views.
Well, I'm not pleased. I think the average Democrat is pretty pleased, probably more enthusiastic about Biden than they were during the election, because I think he was the anti-Trump. You know, anybody
right.
but Trump would do. And with the passage of COVID relief and rejoining the Paris Climate Accord and, you know, a lot of measures like that. I mean, there was a low bar to start with, and he's above that. But his measures, you know, like on climate, he just came out with his infrastructure proposal, which only about a third of which really deals with reducing carbon emissions. And even what he does there is, you know, it's basically tax credits. That's the emphasis, corporate welfare. Not really directly building renewable energy systems and so forth. So that's one example. The plan is fiscally conservative. You know, he figured out how much he could raise in taxes by increasing the corporate tax rates halfway back to what Trump had cut them from. And then he decided that's what I have to spend. And that's how I came up with the number rather than that's backwards. You know, what you need to do is figure out what needs to be done and then figure out how to pay for it. And, you know, what that means is you got to spend the money now and pay it back over time with taxes. And if you do it through the public sector, as we advocate, revenues from public energy, transportation, housing, and the new green machinery for zero emissions manufacturing and agriculture. So it's totally inadequate. And then when it comes to anything that's controversial, he's been gutless. Like last week, he decided in the midst of the biggest refugee crisis since World War II, 80 million people displaced around the world, that he would keep Trump's cap on refugees at 15,000 after promising to raise it to 125,000. He got pushback, so now he says he's going to come out with a new number in May. Another thing is he promised that OSHA would issue an emergency safety standard to deal with the COVID crisis. So workers, essential workers, would have protective equipment and practices at work, such as social distancing, to protect them. And OSHA, he promised that they'd come out with that standard. And the reporting is they decided not to because they don't want to push back from Trump supporters who don't want to wear masks. So that's what I mean by gutless. And then when it comes to foreign policy, you know, there's no change from bipartisan U.S. imperialism. You know, he still wants to overthrow the president of Venezuela and install a guy the U.S. picked, Juan Guaido. They're backing the dictator in Haiti who refused to leave office after his term has expired. They're putting $100 billion into new ICBMs in the midst of a new nuclear arms race, saber rattling toward Russia and China, when what we really need to be doing is sitting down with them and talk about climate in this arms race. So I have, you know, a lot of problems with what Biden is doing. They really, it's the same old Democrats. It's, you know, some people are saying, well, he's different. He's spending money. The COVID relief package we just got was half the amount that we got under Trump. So, you know, this austerity that the Democrats have practiced on domestic needs really hasn't changed. Although to listen to the liberal corporate media like MSNBC, CNN, New York Times, and Washington Post, you know, Biden is the new FDR. I say, let's not get carried away. You know, let's really look at what's going on.
You know, I'm reading a book called Lucky, which was about the 2000 election, and they did, the Democrats did everything to vanquish Bernie Sanders. So, you know, Biden was the centrist, Sanders was the leftist, and they wanted to get rid of Sanders. So ultimately, from your perspective, and I know what you're going to say, that was a bad idea, right?
A bad idea to reject Sanders?
Yep.
Well, that's the corporate Democrats who are firmly in charge of the Democratic Party. I think a good illustration of that is when a seat opened up on the Energy and Commerce Commission when Elliot Engels was beat. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says, I want to get that seat. She wants to be on Energy and Commerce because it deals with issues like Medicare for All and the Green New Deal. And the corporate Democrats recruited Kathleen Rice down there on Long Island, a conservative Democrat, to run against her for that seat. And when the policy and steering committee of the Democratic caucus voted on which one of them to put in that seat, it was 46-13 for Kathleen Rice over AOC. I think that gives you a good indication of how little power the progressives have, you know, Bernie Sanders, AOC, and the rest of them, compared to the corporate Democrats. And I think one of the things that progressives need to realize is that although, you know, the squad and the progressives are getting a lot of media, they don't have power in the Democratic Party. They are basically making it look better than it is.
So in the book, Lucky That I'm Reading, they say the three main contenders for vice president was Susan Rice, Harris, and the lady that lost the governor's race, that was
Stacey Abrams.
Yes, Stacey Abrams. So, out of those three, what's your impression of those three?
Well, they're all corporate Democrats. You know, Stacey Abrams is doing good work on voting rights, but when she was the Speaker of the House, or at least the Democratic leader in the Georgia Assembly, she was very deferential to corporate interests. So, you know, they were all from the corporate wing of the party. So Biden, you know, figured Harris would be the best asset in terms of getting votes in the general election. I think that's why she was picked.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, none of them would have signaled a, you know, a progressive move by, you know, where Biden was going. He's a longstanding corporate hawk. And that's what we've got. And, you know, despite the media hype about, you know, we're in, you know, a COVID pandemic. We got to spend some public money on relief. And infrastructure is grossly, you know, neglected in this country. So spending on that is something that has broad support. But the scale at which Biden has proposed, I mean, aside from the climate, it doesn't even come up to what the American Society of Civil Engineers has said we got to spend in the time period Biden's proposal covers, just to bring our infrastructure up to a reasonable standard, let alone, and that's not even talking about what we got to do to transform our energy system and productive systems to zero out carbon emissions. So there's, you know, you got to look beyond, you know, the rhetoric and look at, you know, what's actually proposed and what the problem is, and does it solve the problem? And none of these proposals do.
So how long do you think the average American, how many more election cycles will Americans vote against their economic interests?
Well, I think given a plurality voting system in an extremist Republican Party, it's not just a conservative party anymore. It's extremist. It's rule or ruin. If they can't rule, they will ruin. I mean, they did that to Obama. They're going to do it and are doing it to Biden. So, you know, and they mobilize their people around nativism, racism, conspiracism, and scapegoats, all kinds of different fantasies. And so progressives feel compelled to vote for centrist corporate Democrats to stop this extremist Republican Party. Now, I would say the center and the progressive side are much larger than the reactionary side represented by the Republican Party. So the problem is progressives feel they can't vote for a progressive option like the Green Party because it might elect the Republican under a plurality voting system. So I don't think that's really going to change. It's been entrenched in our two-party system for a couple of centuries. We've got to change how we elect people, go to ranked choice voting for executive offices and ranked choice voting from multi-member districts for legislative bodies, which will create proportional representation. You know, what we have now is a winner-take-all system. The winner in a district gets all the representation, and all the other political viewpoints get no representation. And that's the system we're in. So I don't think that's going to change until we change how we elect people. And that requires ranked choice voting.
When you bring that up, you know, when you were on the campaign trail and you brought that up, that particular issue, did people embrace that? What was their reaction?
Yeah, they do. You know, they say, of course. You know, why have the Electoral College, which almost elected Trump despite him being 7 million votes behind in the popular vote? It was very close. You know, something like about 23,000 votes if they'd flipped from Biden to Trump in Arizona, Wisconsin, and Georgia. Trump would be the president now, according to the Electoral College. So people understand that's got to change. So when I say we should have a national popular vote using ranked choice voting, people say yes. Because then, you know, the audience I'm speaking to wants to vote green. Yeah, they can vote for the Greens. They could rank the Democrats second and not worry about, you know, a crazy guy like Trump getting back in. So, yeah, it has very popular appeal. And right now, there's more movement on this than there's ever been before. I mean, in the 2020 election, we got five more cities and a state, Alaska, to adopt ranked choice voting. Burlington, Vermont adopted it at town meeting day in March. And there are campaigns now in about 45 states working to get ranked choice voting in cities and at the state level. And that's because people understand, you know, we need to open up the political system. The Gallup poll that asks people if the two parties are representing them or do they want a third major party, it's at the highest level ever of how many people want more parties. So I think this is an issue, an idea whose time has come, and it's a reform we can win because we are winning it. So, yeah, I got a good response to that.
You know, Biden is saying that he wants to run for a second term. And there was talk that he, during the campaign, that he was kind of losing it back then. Do you think he has the wherewithal to serve out his first term and run for a second term?
Oh, yeah. I mean, presidents have all kinds of aides. They don't have to do much. They're almost like, you know, network anchors that read the script. So we know Reagan was starting to lose it, you know, particularly in his second term. But, you know, there's a whole apparatus around him. So, you know, unless he gets extreme dementia, yeah, he could survive another term, you know, do another term. I think he'll have to decide that as it gets closer to when he needs to make a decision. But I don't see that probably being a barrier to him running again.
Wow. Wow. And it depends on who the Republicans put up. There's talk of Trump running again. What do you think?
I think there's so many civil and criminal charges against him are pending or under investigation. He's going to be so tied up in the courts that he won't be able to run. So I think the Republicans are going to come up with somebody else, which could be worse because they could be, you know, more energetic and competent than Trump was. I mean, Trump was a performer on the media, but he was lazy, put incompetent people around him. So a lot of the things he said he was going to do, he didn't get done, which is probably a blessing. But the next candidate the Republicans put up may not be so incompetent.
You mean somebody like Ted Cruz?
I don't see Cruz as competent. I don't see him as energetic. You know, they could pick him, but he's so unpopular with, you know, the reports are, he's so unpopular with the other senators. I just don't see him being the candidate. I think, you know, people like Rubio or Josh Hawley or, you know, this Cotton guy, they got a lot of potential candidates. I just personally think Cruz is so, he doesn't have the common touch. So, you know, he almost got beat in his last race for Senate by Beto O'Rourke. So personally, I just don't think it's going to be Cruz.
Okay. Okay. So you think Josh Hawley has a future in the Republican Party?
Yeah, I think he articulates that far-right extremism. And, you know, it's a whole open field. It's hard to predict, you know, who will emerge on top. But
okay.
I would put him among those that could.
Okay, so we're a few months into the first term of Joe Biden. What should Americans expect over the next couple of years?
It all depends on the filibuster. If Biden and the Democrats don't get rid of the filibuster, they're going to get very little passed. You know, the legislation that can't be done by reconciliation, like the For the People Act, which is about voting rights and stopping partisan gerrymandering and a lot of other reforms, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which will restore the preclearance provision of the Voting Rights Act that the Supreme Court knocked out, D.C. statehood, immigration reform, you know, police reform. I mean, all the things on social legislation, domestic policy, the Democrats want to do, they're not going to get done if the filibuster is still there. And even if they do get rid of it, they still got some conservative Democrats like Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, they got to win over. And those people are going to extract concessions and water down the legislation. And then where they do go for reconciliation for these infrastructure bills, we just had the American Jobs Plan, which is emphasizes physical infrastructure. There'll soon be an American Family Plan, which emphasizes social or human infrastructure, like tuition-free community colleges and child care and pre-K, a lot of social programs. You know, they may get versions of those passed by reconciliation. So I think that spending will be popular, even if it's not adequate to the problems, but the social legislation won't pass. So I think that's what we can expect. I think the Democrats are going to push hard to use reconciliation to get these physical and social infrastructure packages passed. And exactly what survives what Trump proposes is going to be hammered out in Congress in the next few months between the corporate lobbyists and the members of Congress horse trading, which they're going to do a lot more of because earmarks are back. so people can hold out until they get something for their district. So I think that's what we'll see. If the filibuster passes, you know, some of the social legislation will pass, you know, like D.C. statehood is long overdue. But, you know, it, like I said, it depends on the filibuster. And I'm not seeing a vigorous and consistent effort by Democratic leaders like Biden and Schumer pushing to get rid of the filibuster. So I think that's the big variable in what happens in the rest of the Biden administration.
I've been following politics for many, many years. Can you outline for our listeners exactly what the filibuster is and what it does?
Yeah, what it means is anybody can object to a piece of legislation being voted on, and to stop debate and, you know, move it to a vote, you need 60 senators to vote for it, which means in this Senate, you need 10 Republicans and all the Democrats. And that just doesn't happen. So filibuster is a way of stopping legislation from going forward. Historically, it was used to stop civil rights legislation going back to the 1800s. And it was used a lot during the civil rights movement. And that's been its role. The conservative wing of the Senate has always used the filibuster to stop expanding civil rights. That's been the primary thing it's been used for. So it's a way for the minority to stop the majority from putting legislation on the floor and having a vote.
Okay. So what's going on in Howie Hawkins' world?
Well, we're continuing to advance the policies that we advocated, an eco-socialist Green New Deal, community control of the police, an economic bill of rights, deep cuts in military spending, and basically dismantling the global military empire and providing aid instead of arms and making friends instead of enemies around the world. You know, those kind of policies. So we do a weekly and sometimes twice weekly podcast where we talk about these issues, answer questions, bring on guests. And I'm writing articles. I'm working on a critique of the Biden infrastructure plan with respect to how it does nothing really about climate. And, you know, so we're still campaigning. I'm just not a candidate.
Okay. So what's going on with the student loan debt crisis? There's been talk about $50,000 forgiveness. What do you think?
Well, I think that's another case where Biden is gutless. You know, historically, he's been backed by the debt industry, the credit card industry. You know, in this case, the federal government owns over 90% of the debt. You know, they could say it's forgiven and, you know, pay for the forgiveness over time with revenues. And Biden has been talking about 10,000 forgiveness. Progressives in the Congress are saying 50,000.
Uh-huh.
And we're saying just wipe the slate clean on student debt and then have a loan program going forward that doesn't charge interest. Why should the government be making money off student loans?
Right.
And, you know, puts a limit on what people have to pay, you know, a certain percentage of their income above poverty. And they pay back those loans over 20 years. But after 20 years, you forgive any remaining balance. That's the kind of program they have in Europe, in some European countries for people who have to borrow. You know, you can have tuition-free public colleges, but you still need to borrow for living expenses unless you add a stipend like the old GI Bill did after World War II, or if you go to a private school and don't get a complete, you know, full ride. You know, people are going to need to borrow money to go to college. But you need a fair loan program, not what we got now where, you know, so many people are just paying the interest. And in the end, they're paying many times the principal in interest. And, you know, there are people on Social Security whose checks are garnished because they're still paying student loans. It's ridiculous. If the government is backing loans, that's for the purpose of people getting an education, not making money off them with, you know, these interest charges. So we need a new student loan program. And because I think the last figure I saw was 1.7 or 1.8 trillion in total student debt. That's a huge burden on people. And to lift that would be a big economic stimulus, which we need coming out of this COVID depression, because, you know, the assumption that we're just going to get back to normal, I think, is wrong, because there's not, the profit rates are pretty low. So the incentives to invest and expand by capitalists are low. So unless we have bigger stimulus, we're going to have the kind of slow recovery we had coming out of the Great Recession.
So, Howie, our time is almost up. Tell everybody how they can listen to you on the Internet. How can they listen to your podcast?
Well, they can find them archived on our website, HowieHawkins.us. And on there you can find out when how to link up to the regular podcast. You can go to our Facebook page. You know, just Google Facebook Howie Hawkins, and every week we, you know, put, you know, notification of the next podcast and how to link up with it. We also have a website called greensocialist.net, which is the Green Socialist Organizing Project, which is trying to push the kind of platform we are talking about, and the podcasts are publicized there and archived there as well.
Okay, great. So, Howie, I'm sure we'll be talking again as the Biden administration evolves. So you've been listening to Howie Hawkins, and I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Howie, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.